Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Lofi, alongside the Arbor Jet, Joe Aitken. Joe, happy July. How are you?
You know, I'm good, Corey. I can't believe how fast July's ticking along. It's already past the 4th. Things are going good. We got tons of rain up here in the Midwest. Trees look awesome. Enjoyed the 4th. Went up north. Did some time on the property. Got the old tractor started up. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the podcast tonight. And I think we, like every other podcast, we got a great guest tonight. So it's going to be fun talking to him.
Yeah, it feels good to get back in the swing of things. Right now, mid-July, we're experiencing some wildfire smoke that's come in just from the western side of the state. And then, of course, everything that's burning in California and Washington, Oregon, and all that. But, you know, it's good to be here. Good to let the kind of the woes of the day roll away. And, yeah, let's jump into tonight's episode. Do you want to take a minute to introduce our guest?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I feel privileged to have him. A lot of you guys, if you've been in the tree business for a while, he's pretty well known. Dave Leonard is a Dave Leonard Arboriculture. I'll let him do a little bit of his own introduction, but I've known Dave probably going on 20 years now. When I started with ArborJet, I had the pleasure of meeting him at a couple of the trade shows, and we pretty much stayed in communication since then. So, Dave, welcome to Discovering Forestry Podcast. How you doing tonight?
Well, thanks, Joe and Corey, for having me around. And I'm looking forward to talking with you all and a little bit about what needs to be done with trees, or should be done. And yeah, I've been around a while. So I remember, yeah, at least 20 years ago, and we have the same similar thing about history that we like, you know. So we'll see how this goes, and I'm sure it'll be cool.
Dave, everybody had a different path, and we had a podcast not too long ago where we drew some tarot cards, which we thought was kind of interesting because Corey and I both believe that some people are born to serve the industry. Have you always been in arboriculture or forestry in some facet?
Well, I started in college thinking about biology. And then I found out I needed to take art history from 1713 to present to get a degree in biology. And I said I didn't want to do that. So, you know, I had been hanging around with a bunch of crazy foresters. And so I thought forestry might be better. And so I ended up in a forestry program where I didn't have to take art history. So that's the story how I got into forestry. And after 4 years of that, I switched my major. So that took me a little bit longer. There weren't really any job opportunities. So I worked on my master's in entomology for a couple years. Then I found out I really didn't want to know that much enough to get a master's in it. So I launched my own business. Okay. And that was back in 1974.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's been a while.
Now, Corey, do you remember 1974?
You know, 74 would put you, we'll just say, a couple of years before I was on this earth. But I'm glad we had people like Dave, you know, starting to really form and develop the industry just slightly before I came on. Do you remember 74, Joe?
Yes. Believe it or not, yeah. I'm old enough to remember 1974. And then 19,
wow.
Centennial. Yeah, Dave may have me by a few years, but I was not in arboriculture as a trade till about maybe 10 years later. It was mid to early 80s when I got into it.
Well, I wasn't aware. To make for arboriculture as a field. I worked for, a couple, a line clearance company. I worked for Townsend for a couple of summers while I was going to school to help pay my way through school. And we were actually doing not line clearance, but highway right away. And so that helped. And of course I had run a chainsaw before a time or two. And, there was just a gap in the Lexington or the university area for an educated tree care company. And I thought I knew a whole lot. And boy, I found out really I didn't know a whole lot. So it was a steep learning curve there for a while.
No, fantastic. I think it's exciting. Yeah, so you knew you were going in to do so much trees.
Yeah, and so I worked on that, and it was good, and I worked for a lot of university professors because I had a lot of contacts there, and it kept me busy. And somewhere about 1978, I heard of the ISA and the Kentucky Arborist Association. So I went to my first ISA conference in 1979, not in 79, it was in 81 before I went, and I haven't missed one since. So wow. That's a lot of meetings.
You're committed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm committed. Yeah, and I was the director for Kentucky chapter for 18 years. And then went off that a while ago, but that introduction to arboriculture was fantastic. Just to know people from all over the world that are interested in like things.
So, yeah, we
a great big family. Great
it is. We had a podcast a ways back on the value of ISA credentialing, and it's not our main what we want to talk to you about tonight, Dave, but. Just to build on that, you kind of hit on the value of networking and the education that you can pick up on these seminars. Now, you are, correct me if I'm wrong, you're a board certified master arborist, aren't you?
I'm more than that, but that's a good start.
Okay.
I'm also a registered consulting arborist with ASCA.
Okay.
American Society of Consulting Arborists. And I don't know if you know all the history, Joe, of how I was involved with ISA, but back in 1988, I was contacted by ISA, actually Sharon Lilly, and she said, Dave, we're thinking about getting a certification program going. And she explained that to me. And she said, we'd like you to be on the committee. The test committee to help write the questions. I said, well, that's pretty cool. I said, who else is on the committee? And she named like 9 other PhDs.
In you.
And I said, well, and then there was me. And I said, well, okay, but why do you really want me when you got all these other people? And they said, we want you to keep it real. And I thought, well, this should be quite an honor. So I signed up for that, and it took us 4 years to write 1,000 questions. So all the certified arborists out there, I was on the original team that wrote the 1,000 questions that you don't like so much.
I like them, though. Do you still have any of that original documentation of writing the ISA's credentialing test?
No, we have to throw all that away. We can't keep any records.
Oh, bummer. I was thinking for the museum, it'd be interesting to have a piece of something that started it all for all of us, because Corey and I both in a podcast talking about ISA credentialing both value, the next step an arborist can take by becoming certified and then continuing his continuing education points. So,
yeah. And then the BCMA test came around. You know, after 8 years of being certified, people were saying, well, we know more than the new guys. So, you know, we want a harder test. So we wrote a harder test. And there it is. It's out there now.
Yes. And they just revamped that. Were you part of the second phase? Did you get a chance to help with that one too?
I was not called in back into duty for that. So right. I was grateful. I did miss it, but I was grateful to.
No, that's pretty amazing. I did not know that you were involved with the original drafting of that first exam. That's pretty cool, dude.
Yeah, where we had, you know, 10 domains and you had to do everything. And my specialty, my domains were planting and establishment. I convinced them that we needed to know something about planting trees. But, you know, they didn't really think arborists needed that. So that was had to do a selling job for that. And then soil and water. So those two things, and then a little bit of touching on other things like urban forestry and things like that.
Well, those are some pretty aggressive topics that I think a lot of people, when you talk to people in the industry, they look at it and they go, trees. Oh, I can ID this. I can ID that. But to be a true arborist and to really have a grasp of how everything's connected, Dave, what you've been able to do and help people in our industry do is pretty incredible. So I think we all owe you a thank you for that.
Oh boy.
Or maybe we got some people who are listening going, I didn't take too well to those categories. I don't know about that. How have you seen kind of this evolution? And what's been your observation as to how people have started to adapt to those domains or those specialties that you just talked about?
It was part of what I learned in forestry at all, but I realized it was very important to know where trees originate and how they're installed, and we're seeing so many problems with how they're installed. And we still are today. So I haven't done very well getting that information out there. But a lot of it comes with, you know, for nursery stock too. So I hope there's some nurserymen out there listening as well.
Yeah, we got a pretty vast audience. Actually worldwide. So yeah, there's gotta be somebody out there that's, a lot of our municipal listeners probably have their own nursery that they pull from. Go ahead, Dave.
I just hope they don't plant the trees in the nursery 6 inches deep. That's the way we're getting in the root.
Yeah. We also had an amazing, a group on Denise Vidosh here in Michigan has a retree program starting where that's nursery stock that's coming from a landscape, someone's front yard. So instead of cutting it down, they're posting it on an online catalog that anybody looking for a mature tree can find that tree and have it spaded out or knifed out or using a tree spade. Could pick that tree and have it planted on their property. But I wanted to, you kind of alluded to it. You know, we talked about credentialing, and one of the most talked about subjects that we get, Corey and I get asked, is getting into the industry. And you kind of touched on a couple of them about your involvement with ISA and then local chapters and networking. For any of the new listeners or the young generation that's thinking arboriculture, urban forestry for a trade, any advice you would give them to really get a hold of what this is really all about?
Sure. First, you know, I was just a little bit of about what I did. A friend of mine, a horticulturalist that taught vocational school in Louisville, got me, you know, invited me to a KAA meeting, my first KAA meeting. And I thought, well, this is pretty cool. And I learned about the arborists in Louisville and a few of them, and what they were old timers. And that was good. And a couple of them were still around. And but then Frank Santamore, if you knew Dr. Frank, was the curator at the Washington, D.C. Arboretum, the National Arboretum.
Okay.
He came to speak to us for our leads. And you know, I had lunch with him. And that was just an amazing experience. And then, to meet somebody like that who was so knowledgeable and had that wealth of experience. And then, you know, in another year or so, I'm eating lunch with Richard Harris in California, you know, and at another conference. And it's just the people you get to meet, there's so much knowledge out there. We need to get that out. And I think ISA is doing a pretty good job of it. But certainly we could do more. And this is one way to do it.
I think, you know, when Corey and I and Kara decided to put this together, it was another avenue to raise the bar in the industry and be able to reach more people during tough times. And I think we're doing that, Corey. I think we're really doing a good job of reaching the masses.
I agree, Joe. And something really cool about this, and Dave, thanks for popping on and being here, is – and you've heard people come on this podcast from, you know, hey, I just got out of school, or I'm thinking about switching industries. But you're witnessing, and folks are listening to Dave Leonard, who's been in the industry since many of us were born. So really, Joe, not only have we pushed this podcast and a lot of our guests and their information out to the masses, but it's hitting on different industries within our industry. And then it's also hitting on different age groups, which is really, really cool to see.
So, Dave, what we wanted to talk about tonight and kind of get into, and I think it's something that you've been practicing this for quite a long time, but below grade, soil compaction, root collar excavation. But we started talking about how long ago you started getting into this and how. So when we talk about below grade, and you got so much experience in this, probably than, God, just about anybody I know. Let's get into why you went on this direction in your day-to-day business, and how has it been since you've done it?
Okay, Joe. Well, I'll try and communicate some of that, but that's a lot to communicate. So we found out and we discussed, you know, at ISA, a huge lack of research, because nobody was working with the tree underground. And arborists work with, you know, what they can climb. If you can't climb it, it's not a tree. You know, we've heard that so many times. And so... but we know the problems, and that was recognized long ago. The problems start below grade. The problems with what we see above grade originate below grade. So how do we deal with those? And there wasn't that much research being done, because it's really hard to see what's going on, and you get dirty.
Oh, yeah, you get dirty.
Well, we found out we still get dirty, but at least now we have a way to see what's going on. And so I started working with the Air Knife. I worked with Air Spade and then with Air Knife. And I don't care what tool you use, as long as you're looking below ground. And it really opened my eyes as what was going on, because I had one job that I had to excavate root collars for 10,000 trees.
Wow. You know, you go back quite a long ways with this, Dave, and, you know, we made that clear, and I'll try to shorten up the questions, but, you know, this fracturing soil isn't new. This goes back got, you know, maybe the 1910s, 20s with the Irish arrow furt gun, which
you know Ed Irish, or you, we knew of him, and the old soil fracturing tools that he had or made, and soil fracturing, getting air in the soil. So he recognized that was a problem, and we've taken it many steps further than that now, but so there was the grow gun. And,
I just picked one up. I think now, I told you that.
Yeah, you said you'd found one, and I said I have a couple sitting in the shed here too. But I have a different model than you have.
There was one other one we were laughing about, the TerraLift.
The TerraLift was another machine that was big in England more than that, but it's it was a very expensive machine too. So now we've got a handheld tool that's quite affordable, and you can use that to move soil without injuring tree roots, and you can see what's going on below grade, and we're learning a lot, and that's the cool thing about it.
I'm surprised they're knowing that we've known about root collar excavation, and there's more than one thing you can do with the air knife. It's not just fracturing soil.
Starting with root collar excavation is the basic thing to see what's going on. If you've got some girdling roots, if the tree's planted at the right grade, finding that edge of the root ball when the tree was planted is always cool, because you see roots doing really weird things. At that point, you might find the wire basket or something, the edge of that, and you'll see those roots turn and go right back into the root ball. And I don't want to get out into that crap out there. You know, it's nasty soil. It's compacted. So you've got to, you know, and now we know why. It's called the interface, soil interface. And that's something that needs to be broken down and allow roots to get out. Let's encourage them to get out into that stuff that's not so desirable as the nursery soil. So anything we can do like that, dig a round deep planting hole, but a really wide dish type planting hole, three times the diameter of the soil ball or bigger. And we dig the holes for all everything we plant with the air knife.
So you could even in a planting, prepping a site to plant can be done with an air knife, not just fixing a tree that's there struggling. We can plant with it.
Yeah. So we use them for, certainly around existing trees, and you've done some construction near there, then you've compacted soil. So we can decompact the soil. I mean, it's best to not compact the soil in the first place, but it's kind of hard to do that. So salvage what you can, and then come in and do some decompaction. And we've developed several ways to do that with, vertical mulching, pushing the tool into the ground and blasting it, and then, you know, getting some air into the hole. So basically you're like drilling holes, but you're not drilling, you're using air. And then radial trenching came along, and now the ultimate way to do all that is air tilling. So we just blow up all the soil, the upper 6 inches or 12 inches or whatever we need to do, and incorporate organic matter if that's called for. And the trees take off because they've got some oxygen now that they didn't have before. They were limited.
You just brought up a good point. I don't think there's enough research. And like I said, I still bump into people. When I talk about the air knife, I still bump into people or soil remediation in general. Why do guys have such a hard time selling this? You know what, in theory, as we sit here and talk, it makes perfect sense. Why can't we sell it? Why can't they sell more of this?
Well, tree guys are, like to climb in trees, and they can sell something that they can see. And well, you got a dead branch. okay? You know, we can get that. They can talk about tree structure, but they can't see what's going on below ground, and they're just not there yet. And we need to create a lot more awareness about what goes on below ground and how all-encompassing the tree root system is. And yeah, there's so much about tree roots that we're still finding out. And now we've got all the mycorrhizae in the soil network, the biology network, and soil food web, and everything underground that we're learning. It's just, it's huge right now. And people should be jumping on it with both feet. But I'm like you, they're not. But we need to be.
Well, I got a feeling that as the industry continues to evolve and we start to lose a lot of the compounds that we use on a day-to-day basis, I got a feeling that the companies that jumped on this early and adopted this are going to be light years ahead of the guys that no longer can go out and just pull the hose out and spray a compound. Because, you know, treating the effect and not the cause is kind of missing in diagnostics.
Yes, for sure. And yeah, you just said it right there. Just very, very bluntly, we've been treating effects for a long time and we need to be treating the cause. Correct. So let's do that. Yeah.
So I love the tool and I've always loved it. And I know there's such a value in urban landscape. So now we went out there, we did everything. Now post care. So now that we did this, I'm proud of a program that we developed, Corey and I and Team ArborJet developed post care products. So after we do this, or after you've done this to a tree, a high value tree, you get it all tilled up. What now? What?
Oh, you set me up good for that one.
Yeah, because I think it's just as important.
We want to make it as forest-like as possible, because that's where trees evolved. And forest doesn't include turf. I'm sorry, all you people that love turf out there, but. So let's mulch it, make it more nature-like, and mulch and water. And yeah, sure, you can plant some ground cover in there. That's fine. But let's keep the turf away. It's a totally different system. It's totally unfamiliar to trees, and they fight all the time. Okay, how's that, Joe?
You know what? When I was fishing for Dave, you answered in your very first sentence was recreate the forest floor. You know, yeah, we get out there. We see this tree we love, we pick it out of its natural habitat and stick it in our front yard and say, "Hey, Mr. Arborist, why is it struggling?"
So many answers to that. Yeah, we've taken it from a light-limited environment and a sunlight-limited environment, and we've moved it into a soil-limited environment. And because it's not in its native soil anymore. It's in a compacted mess of soil that we kind of call soil, but it's a long way from that.
Exactly. The horizons are no longer there. You go from a little bit of topsoil, a little bit of organic matter, then boom, you're right into parent material and gravel.
What no respecting tree would even want to grow in.
Yeah, but we ask it to, and for most part of its life, it does a pretty good job, and it tries very, very hard.
Yeah, when it's young and vigorous, it can handle that. But then as it reaches middle age, it begins to decline just as it gets really nice.
Right at 25, 30 years, it starts to show signs and symptoms of decline.
Yeah, and we can do better than that, but there's so much. You just got to know what's going on below ground and take care of the below ground part of the tree, and people don't do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a learning curve, but something we got to work harder on as industry leaders to guide more people. I talked to a young aspiring arborist today about it. And if you can talk about it intelligently, the guy ate it up and I think he's ready to get into it. So as we wrap up tonight, and I can't thank you enough for your, your involvement with ISA. I did not know that you wrote the ISA manual. I think that's awesome. If you, you know, with below grade and soil fracturing, air knife, if you got to leave with one thing to say to guys out there getting into this, what would you tell them?
Well, I would say that if you're pruning trees, cutting down trees, that's all fine. But if you want to take care of trees and keep them around a lot longer, which is great for repeat business, you need to be taking care of the part of the tree that's underground. And that's just not fertilization. There's a lot more to it than that. So we need to have more talks about that, Joe. That's all I know to say.
Yeah, more education. We need to get ISA and TCIA and all our local chapters to talk more about it. And I'm game to preach and talk about it because I know the results. You've seen the results. And I think they would be amazed if they did it. They would see the results also. So,
Well, the research is out there that shows it works. Bartlett has helped us with that. And you know, all the bigger companies have now adopted the use of the tools, and we need to get it out to the smaller companies that can get out there and let them be taking care of trees.
That's perfect. Well, Dave, thank you so much.
Dave, I really commend you for being a part of this. I want to thank you for all the work that you put in. I think Joe and I and the fellow arborists out there really owe you a great debt, and really just so grateful for you. So thank you so much for that.
Well, I appreciate the accolade.
Sure. Thank you, Dave. Thank you for Joe for spearheading that conversation. Really good one. Lots of really good content. This may be one that folks go back and listen to over and over again. And thank you to the listeners. Please feel free to leave us 5 stars and tell a friend. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you all.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you around.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.